Enemies of the People, December 2022, Chapter 10, Keeping It All Secret. While the 19th century Rothschilds wanted everybody to know exactly how rich and powerful they'd become, their 21st century descendants tend to keep a low profile and understate their role. This, I suspect, is because if the true extent of their phenomenal wealth and power were generally known, it would spark worldwide outrage and anger. Quigley writes that merchant bankers, also known as international bankers, private bankers, or investment bankers, are generally, quote, devoted to secrecy and the secret use of financial influence in political life, end quote. A certain degree of deceit formed part of the Rothschild modus operandi right from the word go. How else would they have survived the police investigation into their handling of Wilhelm IX's money under the 1790s French occupation, or being able to use his funds in London to found their own financial empire? Why else would Natty Rothschild have warned Cecil Rhodes to be, quote, careful about what he said in public about the Boer War, through fear that some might, quote, lay the blame for what has taken place on the shoulders of capitalists and those interested in South African mining, end quote. Sometimes we can identify particular acts of concealment, such as the disappearance of evidence concerning Disraeli's financial dealings with the family, and the destruction of Natty Rothschild's correspondence after his death, which left Ferguson wondering, quote, how much of the Rothschilds' political role remains irrevocably hidden from posterity, end quote. But there is a general fog around the Rothschilds' activities, which arises historically from the very structure of their family business, run as a private and thus secret partnership. Quigley notes that such private status ensured, quote, the maximum of anonymity and secrecy to persons of tremendous public power who dreaded public knowledge of their activities. He adds, quote, in return for flotations of securities of industry, they took seats on the boards of directors of industrial firms, as they had already done on commercial banks, savings banks, insurance firms and finance companies. From these lesser institutions, they funneled capital to enterprises which yielded control and away from those who resisted. These firms were controlled through interlocking directorships, holding companies and lesser banks, end quote. The multiplication of financial entities that have borne or still bear the Rothschild name is in itself bewildering. These include N.M. Rothschild, Rothschild's Continuation Holdings AG, the Rothschild Frères, Banque Rothschild, Edmond de Rothschild, Rothschild Intercontinental Bank, Rothschild Asset Management, Rothschild Incorporated, Rothschild North America, Rothschild Canada, Rothschild Europe, Rothschild GmbH, Rothschild Italia S.p.A., Rothschild Hispania S.A., and Rothschild offices in Argentina, Bermuda, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, the Czech Republic, Indonesia, the Isle of Man, Japan, Luxembourg, Malaysia, Malta, Mexico, New Zealand, Poland, Portugal, Russia, South Africa, and Zimbabwe. There is also Concordia BV, the parent company of Rothschild's Continuation Holdings AG, and the St. James's Place Group, originally the J. Rothschild Assurance Group, which since 1999 has had an office in Beijing. And a very important current entity is RIT Capital Partners PLC, formerly Rothschild Investment Trust, which boasts that it is, quote, now one of the UK's largest investment trusts, with a market capitalisation of over £4 billion. But a Rothschild reality often hides behind a completely different name, thanks to the way they have systematically expanded their control. Doherty McGregor explained, quote, they would rescue ailing banks or industrial conglomerates with large injections of cash, take control and use them as fronts. In most of their business organisation, they operated a complex and sophisticated network of interlocking front companies and trusts, which concealed not just the true extent of their ownership of key industries, but their unrivalled power over nations. There is thus, end quote, there is thus a vast entanglement of businesses over which the Rothschilds hold some kind of decisive influence or control. Bouvier writes, quote, the way in which the firm had a role or an interest in these companies was not identical in each case. They made use of a range of diverse financing techniques, end quote. Financial researcher Jean-Jacques Landon describes the result as a maze, which he speculates has been deliberately contrived to be as complicated as possible. There was also money to be made out of such manoeuvres, Quigley adds, with financial capitalists discovering that they could not only make killings out of the issuing of securities, they could also make killings out of the bankruptcy of corporations, through the fees and commissions of reorganisation. Quote, a very pleasant cycle of flotation, bankruptcy began to be practised by these financial capitalists. The more excessive the flotation, the greater the profits and the more imminent the bankruptcy. The more frequent the bankruptcy, the greater the profits of reorganisation, and the sooner the opportunity of another excessive flotation with its accompanying profits. End quote. In addition to the likes of Paribas in France, which is generally known to be a Rothschild entity, other banks historically identified as fronts for the Rothschilds include Warburg, Blackroder, Creditanstalt, Disconto, Kuhn Loeb & Co., and Barings. Further confusion is caused by the Rothschilds' long-term use of representatives or agents within various companies, observing and guiding in a way that is invisible from the outside. The Rothschilds appear to have been particularly keen to hide the extent of their involvement in the oil industry. As we've seen, they're very close to Royal Dutch Shell, and Doherty and McGregor write that they, quote, were to be found in every aspect of European oil, quietly amassing a monopoly. Behind a bewildering flurry of name changes, of company amalgamations, of buyouts and stockholdings, of new donations and aggressive takeovers, end quote. As far as the USA is concerned, many questions have been asked about the precise nature of their relationship with Standard Oil and the Rockefeller dynasty. The two ultra-rich families were holding secret talks about collaboration as early as 1892. Doherty and McGregor relate, quote, Standard Oil's chief spokesman, John Archbold, reported directly to Rockefeller that they had quickly reached a tentative agreement, but stressed that it was, quote, it was thought desirable on both sides that the matter be kept confidential, end of the Archbold quote. Much of the great rivalry between Rothschild and Rockefeller was a convenient facade, say Doherty and McGregor, though both would have the world believe otherwise, end quote. Financial strategist Jacob Schiff of Kuhn Loeb & Co., a Rothschild agent, became the financial strategist for Rockefeller's Standard Oil, which was then refining about 90% of all crude oil in the United States. But we have to consider a third important player in order to complete the picture of the reach of the Rothschilds' power in the USA and indeed across the world. As I explained in a previous article, J.P. Morgan, although it appears to be a completely separate concern, has for a long time been a front for the Rothschilds. And, as Quigley points out, quote, the Rockefeller Group, which was really a monopoly capitalist organisation investing only its own profits, functioned as a financial capitalist unit in close cooperation with Morgan, end quote. So, as a result, explained Doherty and McGregor, quote, Morgan, Schiff and Rockefeller, the three leading players on Wall Street, had settled into a cozy cartel behind which the House of Rothschild remained hidden but retained immense influence and power, end quote. The major victory of this cartel was to push the USA into creating the Federal Reserve, a central bank which, like those already existing in Europe, was not controlled by the government on behalf of the people, but by the bankers themselves in their own self-interest. The so-called need for this entity was deliberately created in the form of a banking crisis in 1907, a financial panic which, remarked Doherty and McGregor, was, quote, a colossal fraud and ran like a true Rothschild scam, orchestrated by Morgan, end quote. Indeed, Morgan, who stepped forward to save the day by providing the solution of a central bank, was duly hailed by the Rothschilds as a man of wonderful resources, in their words, worthy of, quote, admiration and respect, end quote. With this important step achieved, the Rothschilds cartel went about building a vast global infrastructure of financial, political, cultural, academic, scientific and philanthropic institutions and foundations. I touched on this process in the Great War article, which looks at the origins of Chatham House in the UK and the Council on Foreign Relations in the USA, but they're just the tip of the iceberg. Quigley writes of multiple international networks, quote, organised by the same people for the same motives. The financing came from the same international banking groups and their subsidiary commercial and industrial firms, end quote. Over the decades, this has created a multi-level political hierarchy, he says, quote, in this hierarchy, The top level is held by the United Nations and its associated functional bodies, such as the World Health Organization, UNESCO, the Food and Agricultural Organization, the ILO, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the International Court of Justice, and others. End quote. If he'd been writing today, he would probably have added the World Economic Forum to that list, albeit perhaps at a slightly lower level. This institutional power is integrated within the corporate control built up by the Rothschilds over the last 200 years. This is now on such a scale that it defies detailed description. Lorandon was already writing in the 1960s, quote, "It is no longer possible to completely study the Rothschilds' zone of influence because page could be added to page. It is considerable and continues to expand," end quote. What of the situation today? Recent research into the ultimate ownership of international financial and business power has identified BlackRock, State Street and Vanguard as being at the heart of an interlocking network of global holding companies, writes Dr. Joseph McCullough, quote, "While it would take time to sift through all of Vanguard's funds to identify individual shareholders and therefore owners of Vanguard, a quick look-see suggests Rothschild Investment Corp and the Edmund de Rothschild Holding are two such stakeholders." End quote. The combination of institutional and financial power that appears to be wielded by the Rothschilds today would certainly explain the full spectrum ubiquity of the Great Reset agenda currently being imposed on us. Because of the Rothschilds' obsessive concealment of their activity, the historian can sometimes only guess the extent of their role, as Bouvier says. But deceit on this gargantuan scale is a dangerous game. If the truth about the unacceptable and totally undemocratic power and influence of the Rothschilds ever becomes widely known, the layers of secrecy with which they have long covered their traces will surely only fuel the severity of the inevitable reaction against them.